So for this evening's talk, somebody made a request, and I thought it was an appropriate request. Can you please talk about Buddhism and old age? Because I'm getting older and older and older. Not just me, but even our Buddhist society. But I'm not just going to talk about old stuff, but just how, no matter what stage of your life, it's amazing just how much fun you can have. I've already mentioned that I only realized that the Buddha passed away 45th year as a monk after his enlightenment, and I'm now 44, so not that long to go. Yay! But I also remember, it was about 6 months ago, actually, first of all, I was mentioning this over in Indonesia, that for a monk or a nun, when you're a young monk, eventually when you get to 10 years as a monk or as a nun, and for those of you who follow the bhikkhunis over in Dhammasara, that this year will be the 10th year that Ayahasapanya has been a fully ordained bhikkhuni. So she qualifies as being called a teri. That means an elder. And of course, that's after 10 years. And after 20 years, if you've been in full ordination, you're called a maha tera. Now, like maha, like a great sort of elder. But then, nothing happens afterwards. There's no more promotion. And I thought that was really unfair. So in Indonesia, when they asked me, well, after 20 years as a monk, then what happens? So I thought, let's make this old form of monasticism a bit more modern. So 20 years, you can be a mahatera, and after 30 years, mega terror. And after 40 years, giga terror. So that's me now, I'm giga terror. And I think people said, well, that maybe explains. It's not really giga terror, but giggle terror. Because I like having a bit of fun. And it's nice to be able to sort of let go and relax a bit more in your dotage. But I also remembered that old age can be very profound as well. And it's the dumber you get when you get old, it's just quite amazing. Just like the story, it's only about a few months ago when I decided, why not to apply for a seniors card? A Commonwealth seniors card. I'm old enough to get this, don't get any pension, no money out of this. I just give, don't get anything out of this. But anyway, I got a little card, so Commonwealth Seniors card. Why? Well, I don't know, just because it's there, for the fun of it. So, of course, you go online, and when you go online, you fill out all the forms, but there was one thing which they could not accept. My ID, can you please prove who you are? So I had to actually go into the office, to actually do that last little piece. So when I went into the office, the Centrelink office in Armidale, and I went there, I had to make an appointment, and then sort of sit in front of this lady and said, okay, now can you please prove who you are? At which point I said, well, actually, for the last 45 years, I've been trying to find the answer to that question. And she wasn't impressed with my answer. No, come on. Can you please show me your driver's license? I said, no, I don't have a driver's license. I'm a monk. So what about your credit card? No, I don't have a credit card. Your bank account details. Where do you do your banking? I don't have a bank account. What about your home ownership, you know, your rate certificate with your name on it? Said, no, I don't own anything. What about your rental agreement? No, I don't rent anything. And the next thing which they asked me, you couldn't make this up, they said, what about your marriage certificate? And of course, I don't have one of them. So, can you please prove who you are? And I said, I've got nothing. And they said, according to Social Security, whatever you call it, said, I don't exist. I thought, wow, that's so deep. I always suspected that. That's exactly what the Buddha said. Thank you so much. So I've now had it confirmed from Zen Sovik that the Buddha was right. I don't exist. So it's always got a bit of fun, you know, being old. And it's also that, eventually, that because I had a passport, how did you get there? I don't remember, actually, I've got the passport, but anyway, that managed to prove that I exist. I had a birth certificate as well. And but I wasn't there. I didn't know. I didn't sign that. I'd only got my mother and father's, you know, that word for that I was born. Do you remember when, if you were born? How do you know? It's only just somebody else's word for it. Anyway, I won't go there. So eventually, that I found out that yeah, I do exist, sort of. But it was also the case that, you know, it's nice that when you are older, you just, sometimes that when you're young, you want to prove yourself. And you want to have sort of things which you are, and you're, I always remember just being a monk, you know, that all this stuff which you had, your degrees and certificates and qualifications, what does that actually mean as a, especially when you become a monk? Is that really, you know, who you are? And as you get old, you forget all these things anyway. Remember the poor old Ajahn Jacaro, you know, my predecessor. You know, when, now he was a really good counselor, but he did, you know, he didn't have certificates in those days. So, you know, but, you know, once he disrobed, he thought, that's a really good job, he could actually do some counseling. But they said, well, where's your accreditation? I was a monk for a long time. That's not accreditation. You've got to go to a university. So he couldn't get a job as that. And so it's just like myself sometimes that these days we have like mindfulness training. I teach in mindfulness and counseling and all sorts of stuff, but I've got no qualifications for that. So I wonder sometimes if I did go to the United States and do a meditation course, if they asked me, where's your certification? So what university did you study counseling, or where is your mindfulness accreditation? I don't have any. So maybe if I go over there, they won't let me teach meditation anymore because I've got no certificate at university. Just like I remember just this psychiatrist from the United States came to Australia many, many years ago. You know what happened to him? So they said, oh, you know, he's from a big university, he's quite famous. I wanted to come over here to help teach in some Sydney university to teach some psychiatry. And they said, oh, you know, you just, you know, even though you're qualified in the United States, doesn't mean you can just come to Australia. You've got to just do a little exam first of all. I've done an exam, I'm a professor. He said, but you know, the regulations to make sure that your qualifications over there fit the qualifications in Australia. So they gave him two books to study, and they're going to examine him on them. And he looked at one of those books, he said, whose name is on that book? That's my name, I wrote that book. Nevertheless, he had to study it. So I think that's going to happen to me one day. I'm going to go over to the United States to teach some meditation. Here's a book for you, like Mindfulness, Bliss and Beyond. You know, study that. I wrote that. That doesn't matter. You study it. But anyway, we have an interesting life. But especially as you get old anyway, you sort of, all those poor Ajahn Jacaro, because all of his qualifications, they meant nothing anymore. That's the trouble with qualifications. They have their use-by date. And so all those qualifications you have, if you don't upgrade them, if you don't go and do a refresher course, If you don't get it, just re-examine or something. Sometimes people don't recognize your qualifications anymore. Is that bad? You know, sometimes I think, especially when you get old, it's nice to have no qualifications. All those qualifications are now obsolete. All that stuff, I wish I'd have known that to begin with, because all those, that hard work I put in to, you know, learning theoretical physics and quantum theory, I should have seen it from the very beginning. What was the great Heisenberg's breakthrough? The uncertainty principle. So everything is uncertain. So when people ask me a question in the final paper at university, what's the answer? Uncertain. And Heisenberg said that, so you've got to give me top marks. Unfortunately, that wouldn't go well with people because people want something else in their life. But as you get sort of more elderly, you've got a choice. You can have a bit more fun in your life when you don't need to prove things anymore. So there is a great advantage in when a person starts to get old. What do you try and portray to people when you are young? Unfortunately, the trouble is being a monk, that they expect more from you the older you get. And that most people, that when they're old, their main job is to be the free babysitter for their grandchildren. But you know, something I did notice, you know, when people do get old, and when they do relate to their grandchildren. Grandchildren and grandparents love each other. Why is that? It's because the grandparents are now wise enough, they've learnt enough, they're not so afraid of life. They can just love their kids without training them. How many of you have to train your children? Make sure they behave, make sure they do that, this and do that. Sometimes grandparents, they've been there, they've done that. They just want to love. And this is where that nice little insight about it's more important to care than to cure. So how many parents are still trying to cure their children of their bad habits? Trying to cure them for spending too much time playing video games. Trying to cure them from too much laziness. Trying to cure them from this and cure them from that. What happens? So many parents come up and say, oh, my daughter, she's hopeless. Oh, my son, he's far too lazy. So instead of trying to cure them of their bad habits, care for them. What does that actually mean? Just like a grandma who care for you. Because they're much wiser. Instead of just using just straight on trying to be assertive to somebody, they're far wiser. Like this gentleman who his son is only just maybe 18, 19. We're spending too much time going out with his girlfriend, going partying, going to nightclubs, and never really doing his work at college, at university. He's here in Perth. And every time he told his son, look, you've got to do some more work, get your assignments in, your grades are going down. Do the children listen to the mum and dad? Of course they don't. So they use wisdom power rather than willpower. And the wisdom power for this gentleman, he was so smart, he never told his son to study more. He realized his son wouldn't listen to his mum and dad. He found out the weak point, the leverage point. And the leverage for the son was the son's girlfriend. So what happened? He waited, the father waited, until his son came home from the nightclub with his girlfriend. He waited as soon as the car pulled in with his son and his girlfriend. He was waiting for them.
Welcome home, both of you. Would you please come into the sitting room? I want to have a chat. And the son was really embarrassed and afraid. But the girl, she was very happy to have a nice chat with the father of her boyfriend. And of course, he never talked to the son. He just talked to the girl. He said to the girl, "You know that you've been going out a long time together. I'm not quite sure where your relationship is, but I just want to say you're a wonderful girl. Very happy that, you know, you're going out with our son. Nothing about you, but I just thought I'd let you know that my son, his grades are really going down, and that, you know, he's not doing his assignments. And apparently the university has said that if he doesn't pick up his assignments, he might even actually leave university because he's doing so badly. And I'm sure you don't want eventually, I don't know where it might end up, but who knows, maybe you get married one day. You wouldn't want to marry someone who hasn't got a university degree. I'm sure you don't want to do that, do you?" He said, "No, I never knew anything about that." "Okay, anyway, good night. Have a wonderful night together." And that poor boy, he would not be able to be influenced by his mother and father, but his girlfriend had full power over him. She was checking his grades every week. "Now, did you do your assignment? Did you get a good grade for that?" So much so that the poor boy just, you know, even had to go home early after the nightclub because the girlfriend told him to. Mum and dad didn't have to do anything. They just left it all up to the girl. And he was totally under her influence, which meant that his actual grades went up. Now that is wisdom. Just everyone has got a little bit of leverage somewhere. And of course, a mug, you know where our leverage is? It's on our tummy. So, this is actually what happened when the monks were misbehaving many years ago. And they had a big argument. And so even the Buddha couldn't solve that argument. The Buddha went off into the forest. And you know what they did? They had a resolution. All the lay people met together and said, "We're not going to feed the monks until they start behaving." And so the monks went on arms round. And what did they get to eat? Nothing. The next day, nothing. The next day, nothing. And once they got a really empty tummy, they started thinking, "Oh, we shouldn't argue. We should actually, you know, do a better job." And so that's the way, the leverage on monks. So everyone has a leverage. So when it comes to grandparents, they have a lot of leverage over your mum and dad. So be careful. Like my brother, when I went to visit him once over in England, I was talking to his two children, a nephew and niece. And of course, because I'm their uncle, they never call me uncle. You know what they call me? Munkle. Close enough. So I'm their munkle. And and actually, sometimes they say, "Is it really bad luck having like a monk as your uncle, or like having a munkle? Because, you know, I can't give them birthday presents because I've got no money." And you can't do sort of like an uncle thing, just take them out to the football or something. I can't go to the football. There's so many things which I can't do, but it came to the point where I managed to do something for my nephew. And what happened? It was just because I'm well known. So my nephew was coming to visit his uncle here in Perth a few years ago. And he'd been to Vietnam, just no backpacking. He was a young man, good man. Backpacking in Vietnam. When he came through Singapore, through Changi Airport, when he went through the security, they found that he had a bullet casing in his backpack. Not a live bullet. He said he didn't know where that came from, but it was in his backpack. So they took him aside because, you know, that's, you know, really illegal. And so they took him into the special room to interrogate him. He said, "What are you doing with a
a bullet casing in your backpack. I don't know how it got there. It's not live. You know, I'm not a terrorist. And they asked him a lot of questions. Where are you going? I'm going to Perth. What is your reason? You're going to Perth. I'm going to Perth to visit my uncle, who's a Buddhist monk. And at that, the person interrogating him says, oh, does your uncle know Ajahn Brahm? Because I'm his disciple. He said, my uncle is Ajahn Brahm. Oh, really? Off you go. And they let him out. So, you know, at least there is some advantages having a monk who can get you out of trouble every now and again. Because, of course, sometimes, you know, family, you just want to serve, but sometimes you can't. But anyway, as you get older and older and older, at least you can give some nice advice every now and again. Because that's something, you may not have any money, but at least you can give, like, kindness and good advice to people. Because it's something with age. Do you get richer or wealthier? Of course not, because the wealth and the riches, what actually purpose is that? Sometimes, you know, if somebody gets very wealthy and you give that to your kids or your grandchildren or whatever, that's their inheritance. Is that really good for them? A lot of times what happens is that just makes people just much more lazy. But one thing is about when you get older, hopefully you get more wisdom. And that wisdom is something which is wonderful, which can be shared with people who are much younger. There's just that kindness there. So you're not so forceful, you're not so demanding. All those things in life which we think we should give. Because a lot of times it's, you know, we just act out of fear. Fear, what would happen if my children just, you know, don't get a good education or don't get a good life and don't get a good job. Sometimes that as you get older and older and older with old age, you get the wisdom that the emotional intelligence is more important than anything else. Money can sometimes come, it can sometimes go. But there's something else you inherit. You know, what I remember inheriting from my parents and my grandparents was something much, much more powerful. Even I remember from my grandparents, they were very old, but they'd survived the Second World War in London. And it was wonderful just to see just their resilience. Very often during those times there were bombs going off everywhere. I remember my mother and grandmother telling me that a bomb went, they lived in a terrace house. They used to call them two up, two down, a very tiny house. Just whole rows of them along the streets. And the house next to where my mother and grandma were got a direct hit from a bomb. The people next door, the neighbours, were just obliterated. And my mother had a gash. Her arm was lacerated with blood everywhere. But she survived. And they never overreacted. It was almost like part of life. And they said just how wonderful it was during those days, you know, during that Second World War, how everybody just really worked together. It was almost like, because life was so uncertain, that people were dying every day, every evening. There was a certain bonding and caring and looking after one another, which, you know, sometimes people say that sometimes those days were some of the best years, in the sense that life had more meaning. It wasn't a case of arguing with people, it was surviving, pulling together, learning. And they always used to say, if that bomb had your name on it, that's what they used to say then it's a waste of time worrying about it. And there was some wisdom in those ages, and I always took that on board, to say to make the best of life, to really be kind, be caring, give, because, you know, that's your meaning of life. Give it everything you've got. Learn how to rest, learn how to forgive, learn how to relax. Because otherwise... But apparently, these days, when people get old, they always say, have these bucket lists. The things you must do before you die. And I think that's a crazy idea. the things you must do before you die to sort of check this off and check that up. This is just like more just when you were young. You've got to get this certificate and that certificate. You've got to go here and you've got to go there and you've got to do this. And then you've got to get married and then you've got to get divorced and then you've got to get... No, you don't have to do that, do you? But how many times do people actually just get into this rut because everyone else is doing it and think, no, I must do this. And they think that if it doesn't work out, that you're a personal failure. Old age is not a personal failure. Just like even divorce is not a personal failure. Sometimes, like all things, they have use-by dates. Sometimes I have a use-by date, I'm trying to find it somewhere. But sometimes relationships have a use-by date. And I don't know why people blame one another when just, you know, that it ages a relationship like everything else. And sometimes as the relationship ages, sometimes it can age in ways which, you know, you can enjoy one another's companies, but sometimes it goes apart, and that's the nature. And it's not as if someone has done something wrong or to blame anybody. That is the one thing which I think it really causes problems in this world, is blaming. Somebody else's fault. It shouldn't be this way. Now, it shouldn't sort of happen that, you know, that, you know, once we're married, we should be married forever. Just like that story of the two people that once they were married, they lived a lovely life together. She was so devoted to him, he was devoted to her. And eventually they passed away and they met up in heaven. And as soon as they met up in heaven, you know, he came up and said, "Oh, darling, we meet again." He said, "No, no, I've got nothing to do with you now." "What do you mean?" "So, you know, we're supposed to be loving each other." He said, "Oh, don't you remember the ceremony? Till death us do part, we're dead now, so I've had enough of you. Thank you very much." But anyway, just know everything has its use by date. Even relationships and even your body. So we try and make the best use of it. The best use of our time with our friends, the best use of our time in our sort of temples with our friends. But the point with, you know, as old age, we learn how to let go because we have to let go. That's one of the great things about aging. It teaches us how little we own, we really own. People have big houses when they're young because they need a family. They need a car, they need so much. But you know, there comes a time in your life, what do you need all that big house for? All that car, all those possessions. It's much simpler, much easier just living in a small place. So that's why sometimes I look at some monasteries in Thailand, there aren't like old people's homes. Nice old people's homes. A nice little room, a nice little hut where you can be peaceful. You're not trying to impress anybody, you're just letting go and relaxing. In other words, meditating, finding some peace in the life. You've done all of your worldly jobs. Now's the time to find something a bit more interesting. Not saving the world, but understanding this world which you strive so hard for to save. What actually is it? What actually are you doing? There's something about aging which should be that you have more time. Because a lot of times, bringing up a family, even like going earlier, studying, having a family, working, it's just this a big, big draw on your time. Even so many years ago I saw this, and of course this is so common with anyone who's at school, university. They are so tired. In Kuala Lumpur, at a youth seminar, had about, oh, maybe 300 or 400 kids there, from about 14 to sort of, you know, early 20s, and some very smart sort of convener just gave them a questionnaire. What is your worst emotional problem, most troublesome problem? We always, you know, I always thought it would be like, you know, fear of trying to find a partner in life, you know, understanding my sexuality, trying to get on in life, you know, working with my parents. But the biggest problem they had, and it's not just for Malaysia, this is Australia, throughout the whole world, the biggest problem was tiredness. That even 14 or 15, young people were exhausted. And once they put that down, once you read their response, it was obvious why. So much to live up to as a young man or young woman. Got to please your parents. You got to sort of please your teachers. You got to please your friends, the peer pressure. You got to, you know, try and find a sort of boyfriend, a girlfriend, the opposite sex. Got to get your career going in life, you know, just so competitive, and how can I manage to do well in whatever I'm doing? And it was constant. Every part of their day, every part of their life was striving. Striving to make it, to succeed. Not even just to succeed in a high level, but just to, you know, just to be normal and just to be acceptable to others. Your parents, your teachers. It was a constant pushing and very little relaxation and very little just being able just to be. So that tiredness you saw in those people just really, really young, and that carries on with you for many people throughout your whole life. You know, as young man, young woman, you're getting a marriage and just learning about relationships and, you know, what is this person I'm living with? Sounds really easy. But very, very, very difficult. And to have the compromises, and sometimes you feel such a failure, sometimes you feel that maybe there's something wrong with you. That part of, you know, people feeling something wrong with you, at least that's what you learn in aging. There's nothing wrong with you. You belong. You're okay. I don't know how many people feel that way, that there's something missing somewhere. That's why I had to be a monk, because I couldn't live in the world. No, that's really wrong. I could live very, very well in this world. But I choose to be a monk because that was a path where I could find greater meaning. And it's also just when you feel there's something wrong with you, okay, here we go, back to that old story of the trees in the forest. Every tree in the forest. In a real forest, a natural forest, not one which is planted or which is maintained, a real forest. Natural rain, especially natural rainforests. Not one tree is perfect. They're all bent, crooked and damaged. Just like each one of you. You're all damaged and crooked and bent. Just like me. And in fact, it was the crooked trees, the bent ones, are the most beautiful. And also, they belong. There's nothing wrong with you. So, understanding that, and sometimes that's some of the things you can get from an old person, especially a grandparent who's known you for such a long time. Yeah, you're okay. You belong. So that sometimes, like being a monk, that's one of the nice extra things. I can be like an extra grandparent for some of the kids who come here, you know, to support them. I'll never forget some years ago that there was a girl who came, she was about 16 or 17, and I don't mind saying she was a Sri Lankan girl. She came up, she was coming to the temple ever since she was really small, and with her parents, and she came up to me and, you know, after one of the lunches, and she said, can I talk to you? He said, yeah, what's up? He said, I'm in big trouble. Big trouble? What big trouble? And she said, Ajahn Brahm, I'm pregnant with my boyfriend. That's big trouble. He said, have you told your parents yet? She said, no, they'll kill me. That's why I've come to you. Can you please tell my parents for me? You know, I was actually so touched by that. You know, she had an extra grandparent, you know, sort of level, who could actually get her out of trouble. And sort of, people make mistakes. And kids, you know, being kids sometimes, you know, do you make mistakes? Of course, we all make mistakes sometimes, sometimes big mistakes. They do it on purpose, but sometimes these things happen. So what, you know, I could actually talk to her parents, oh, come on, just, you know, she needs you now. So I was actually quite taken with that other little role which I could play in society, like being an elder who was trusted in society. So sometimes that people feel they're of no use when they get aged. But of course, you can be of great use. So when Dennis was saying earlier about having welfare people, please, those people who are over 50 or 60, I think you're the people we should target to actually be welfare officers. In other words, you've got so much to give, so much wisdom, so much trust, and sometimes time as well. Maybe not much energy, but I don't know sometimes. Sometimes the more you give, the more energy you seem to have. It's weird. But, you know, it's very weird, because I was feeling really ill this morning with a cough. But now I seem to have lots of energy. Why is that? Because you're giving. You're serving. So when you actually give and serve, sometimes that gives you a source of energy, a source of purpose, a source of meaning. So I think it's great to be able to, as a person gets old, don't waste your age. Especially when it comes to giving talks. Because that's one thing which I have noticed over, I pointed this out a long time ago, that as you get older, your eyes go. They need cataract operations. Isn't that the case, Dennis? Yeah. And the ears, sometimes we can't hear properly, though we do need hearing aids. And glasses. We need, oh, I already mentioned the also you get forgetful as well, because I already mentioned the eyes. And your hands start to shake. They're not as strong as they used to be. And your legs get weak. So many things when you get old get weaker and weaker and weaker. Except for one. And that is your mouth. Have you noticed that most politicians, the ones who become ministers and prime ministers, they're all old? Because they can speak and speak and speak and speak and speak and they don't stop. That's why as you get old, you know, you should join those therapy groups. You know the therapy group that old people have to join, especially people like me, people who talk too much? It's called, not Alcoholics Anonymous, it's called On and On and On and Anonymous. Anyway, but anyway, there's a lot of stuff which people can do. So, again, but as you are aging, what does that do to your spiritual path? There's still so much you can serve, so much you can give. And, of course, that keeps you involved in society, which means you usually live to a good old age. But it's not only that. It's that just to be able to meditate. How on earth can you really meditate when you get really old and achy and tired and you have illnesses like coughs and other diseases? You know my disease which I have? It's a contagious disease. Hepatitis B. Okay, it's an old joke. Not hepatitis, that's a bad disease. This is hepatitis. Very contagious. If you stay here long enough, you'll start. Okay, come on, laughing. You can catch it if you like. But in other words, whatever happens to you in life, there's no need to make it sad. No need to make it miserable. And so even just learning how to meditate when you're sort of really feeling sick or very tired or you have a cough, what the heck do you do? This is where that Sometimes people just don't know what meditation is. That's one good thing about being a monk for such a long time. You learn the art of meditation. And it's not just watching the breath. It's not just sitting here and just scanning your body. That's just a couple of, you know, exercises. But the real way, when you really meditate, when you're sick or you're old or you're tired, you've got a cough, you've got this sickness, you're really sort of exhausted, it's easy if you know the old Emperor's Three Questions meditation. So when I was in Indonesia, getting tired and getting sort of coffee and just, and not coffee, not the sort of the Indian coffee, not the Indonesian coffee, because I was offered some of that Indonesian coffee, especially one of the first places where I went to was Lampung. And that's where the place where they have the very expensive coffee which they collect from the civet cat's backside, from its poo. And as soon as I heard, now where did this coffee came from? It came from the poo of a civet cat in the jungle. It's amazing just how that stopped me actually just not being very interested in drink. Have you got a cup of tea, please? It's only perceptions. But anyway, so just going over there and just getting a cough because not enough sleep. But when I was over there, just still had to meditate. Teaching a meditation retreat. How can you do that? It's wonderful. Because what you do is learn how to. Now is the most important time. And the thing which is right in front of you right now is the most important meditation object in the whole world. The irritating throat. The the cough. Because that's the old saying. It's not the cough that carries you off. It's the coffin that carry you off in. I always remember that little poem, or not poem, little rhyme. But you just be with what you have. It's all you have to work with. This is your reality. You feel tired, you feel hot, you feel sick, you feel irritated, whatever it is, you're with it. So now the most important time, the experience in this moment, the most important in the whole world, and what do? You care for it. You don't try and get rid of it. Getting rid of it causes tension. It causes stress. And the cough gets worse and more coughy and you get sicker and you can't do anything. Trying to get rid of things in this particular situation just makes it much, much, much worse. And so you're just with it. Allow it to be. Make friends with it. Have some fun with the coughing. And that's where, you know, that I learned that from Ajahn Chah, doesn't matter what sickness or what's happening to you, you can always have fun with everything. So just, even just when I gave a talk to the monks coming back, at the end of the talk, we used to do three sadhus. So as the monks were doing sadhu, I do, that's the first sadhu, the second sadhu, the third sadhu. That was cough sadhus. So whenever you make joy and fun with things, when you don't get upset at things, you find that you get joy, happiness, and you get a boost of energy. So, with age, you may not be as young as you used to be, but you're not as old as you're going to be. Positive thinking. So that means, yeah, we all have our use by date, but as milk gets old, it can become curds, it can become yogurt. And then from yogurt, from all these amazing cultures, I don't know what I'm talking about, of course. But as all these things get older, you get cheese which gets older and it can get used for so many different things.
And as it gets older and older and older and older and older, it's always find a use for it somewhere. And especially as the thing gets older, it's supposed to get more valuable. It's supposed to become heritage. So I don't know, have I become heritage yet? If you don't become heritage, you become a relic. And it's a nice thing about in Buddhism that we actually worship and respect relics. So I know that sometimes that people say that there's some people in Australia that become living treasures. But don't ever say that for an old monk or an old nun. They become living relics. But anyway, what it really means is whatever we have, just change our perceptions about being sick, being old. It's part of life, old age, sickness, and eventually death. And what is death anyway? Death is nature's way of forcing you to slow down. So, why are people rushing? Even today someone told me, I asked them how they're doing, and they said they were getting there. What a stupid statement that is. You're getting there. Where are you getting? I know where you're going. There's only three places you go here in Perth. Pinneroo, Fremantle, or Karrakatta. So if that's you say, oh, I'm getting there. I know where you're getting. So slow down. Slow down. So that it takes more time to get there. So you can enjoy the journey rather than just worry about the destination, which you all know where it's going to be. And as you do, never feel afraid of like old age and aging. When a relationship ages, it can mature, it can change. Sometimes it just fades away. Sometimes, especially your children, your relationship with your children, please let them go. And sometimes, I don't know, this is maybe with the Chinese community. So many people say, oh, my mum and my dad, they brought me up. I got so much respect for them. They want me to carry on the business. But I want to go over to meditate. I want to become a monk or become a nun. So become a monk or nun, but who'll look after my mum and dad's business? I'm sure, you know, that they can sort of find somebody to look after it. Or they can cash in. Why don't they become monks and nuns as well? I know my nephew and niece, they don't want to get involved in my business. They don't want to become monks or nuns, even though it's a wonderful thing for them to do. But anyway, in the meantime, just please give your children some freedom. Because if you give your children some freedom, what happens? It's that sometimes the parents, and they keep on telling their children what to do and how to do it. And of course, that's when your children, they get married or they go overseas and they don't like coming back again. You know, I was always very caring for my mum and dad, but they gave me so much freedom. Even my mother, you know, she let me go off. I remember I was only 17. So I had just finished my degree, finished my university entrance, had a place in Cambridge, and I took a guitar and a sleeping bag, not even a backpack, and I hitchhiked over to Morocco and Algeria and Tunisia. I must have sent my mother crazy just worrying about what I was doing, but to me it was an adventure exploring, and I went with her blessing. She let me go, because I'd let me go and I'd always come back. I always remember that. You know, that even when I became a monk in Thailand, she let me go. She said, I wish you'd become a monk, you know, next door in Shepherd's Bush, but there didn't happen to be any monasteries in Shepherd's Bush at the time. But nevertheless, because she let me go, I knew that was an expression of her love. The greatest act of love is to let somebody go, not to keep. So with your children, please don't keep them close to you. That's just fear. Let them go out there in the world and see how they develop. Trust them. I see this one young man here when his two twin sisters, I remember they had an argument with their mum. They wanted to go to a nightclub. and their mum wouldn't let them. And so they came to me, and I had to talk the mum into letting them go to nightclub. See, they're young, they're trustworthy, and my goodness, they were. And now they've grown out to be wonderful young women. Now, one of them is in London as a doctor. Forget what the other one is doing, a lawyer or somewhere, but just really good kids. So sometimes you can't be too controlling. Trust them, and a lot of times your children will live up to that trust. So anyway, those are sorts of things which you can learn. Oh my goodness, there I go. I've got to go to anonymous because I always talk too long. So anyway, that's something about aging and meditating when you're old and learning how just to make peace, just to be in the moment, whatever it is, care for it, don't choose, and you'll find you have a wonderful life. Anytime, young, middle-aged, old, or die. Thank you for listening. Very good. Okay, what have we got from the internet? Okay, here we go. From Newcastle, Germany, and Germany. Is mental age caused wisdom? First of all, Newcastle. How do I console people who are distraught about their loved ones dying and don't believe in life after death? Well, if the loved ones are dying, it's again, they may not believe in life after death, but their memories will certainly live after death. And that's something which we all know never dies. I've already told many stories about my mother and my father and my grandma, I loved her to bits. Every time she taught me a little bit about how to deal with trauma as well, because every time there was a lightning, thunderstorm in London, she would stop whatever she was doing because it brought back the trauma of the Blitz, the bombing in London, where she was there all the time for about 3 or 4 years. And she would actually just go and sit on the stairs, which were supposed to be the strongest part of the house, stone stairs. She'd sit there. She would not complain, she'd just sit there, and she dealt with the trauma in her own way. And then after the lightning, the thunder's finished, which she obviously associated with the bombing, then she'd come up and just carry on what she was doing. Incredible strength. Well, I saw that as a little kid, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 year old, 9 year old, 10 year old kid. And that's how she coped, found her own way of coping with the trauma of the memories. Of bombs going off right next door during that time, and she coped with it so well, and she just carried on with her life. What a lovely grandma, and just would do the work and do everything else. And so that taught me a lot about just not to overreact with sometimes some of the death which happens in life, like the bombings in Sri Lanka, for example. Distraught about their loved ones dying. What did the cup, the glass, can you see the crack in the glass? There's a crack there. One day someone will drop this glass and it will open up and shatter. That's the nature of a glass. Your loved ones are cracked. They've got the crack of impermanence, death inside of them. It's going to happen one day. Is that being morbid or being fearful? No, it's being real, and the consequence of that, knowing that one day your loved ones are going to die, means that every day becomes more precious. You haven't got time to get distraught and to ruin one day with fear? No. So you know your loved ones are dying, no need to get distraught. Care for the glass as best you can, while the grass is still whole. And then when the death does happen, not destroy, had a wonderful time together. And instead of worrying with fear, which destroys the happiness of the time you have together, you have a totally different way of looking at things. Forget about celebrating the death. Celebrating the life. Don't be afraid of the death. Then you won't mourn.
at the funeral. Wolfram in Germany, does the mind age toward just the body? Of course it's just the body. That's the reason why you can meditate. The mind can be wise, the mind can be happy. The brain ages, that's why sometimes you lose memories. But the mind remembers everything. That's why sometimes if a person gets in deep meditation, it's amazing what you can remember. That never gets lost. But the brain, it just gets a bit overused after a while. Is mental age called wisdom? Not always, but mostly. How do you cope in old age with the body when it falls apart and you have no more control? You don't have control now. You think you do? Can you control not being sick? Sometimes, when you get sick, is it your fault you get sick? I always remember that my body belongs to nature. Sometimes it's going to get sick, sometimes it's going to get tired. Sometimes it's going to cough. Right in the middle of my meditation, just about to get into jhanas and and ruin it all. Just how that person got within a nose of nirvana and blew it. Another one of our compulsory jokes. But just know, who owns your body? It's nature does. So it's not me. I'm just a tenant, just a visitor. So that means that you stop controlling it. When anyone controls, becomes a control freak, that's when things get really bad, really worse. So when your body falls apart, just make the most of it. I'm still waiting to become bald, I mean naturally bald. That's a great disappointment at my age. I thought by this time I'd have all my hair falling out naturally, but I still have to shave it every fortnight. That really, very disappointing. My brother, apparently, but he's already gone bald. He doesn't need his hair. Somehow or other we got the wrong scalp from our mums. But the body falls apart, you have no more control, just let it go. Even if you have no more control, like I don't know why, but when I was in Indonesia, I don't know what food I was eating, I got constipated after about 3 or 4 days. Different food. So what do? You sit on the toilet and you stop trying to control. You relax. Really relax and be patient. Doesn't matter how much time it takes. You don't force it because that makes things worse. At least as a monk, I know how to be patient, how to relax and let go. So I know how to deal at least with one thing. You can't control it and say, right, you've got to come out now. So there's many things which you learn, even just, not this time, a few years ago, I was in Singapore. I don't know, people feed all sorts of stuff. And I had this projectile vomiting. Really sick. So, went to my room, until it was mostly all gone. And then it was late at night, so I just went to bed and just relaxed. When you relax, you don't worry about anything. Then you have a nice night's sleep. You wake up in the morning, go up to the toilet, and carry on where you left off. But the amazing thing is, you know how to really relax and have a nice sleep in between without any worries. I think that was really cool. So anyway, you don't control your body, but you know how to work with it, to live with it, understand how it works so you don't force it and make things worse. Anyway, there we go. An interesting talk about all sorts of things, I hope. Any questions from the floor? Oh yes, Eddie, of course, yes. How old are you now, Eddie? Oh, 20. Nah, come on, your precepts. Yeah. Yeah.
The Buddha was telling us that
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, yeah. Yeah, in the opposite way around too, yeah. So it depends on your cultivation of the mind. Because that's true, because your body will fade away, has its use by date. Just like in a relationship, you know, that eventually fades. But your kindness and the wisdom, that's what you take with you. So that's really important, it's true. The mind's good karma, kindness, wisdom. But sometimes you see many people get negative. They get the old grumpy old men. Well, they never say grumpy old women, do they? It's interesting, that's gender specific. Yeah, anyway, just grumpy oldies. Oh yeah, it can be good fun. Exactly, yeah. So again, it's not the age, but that's the right wisdom of the mind to be able to care, be kind. There's a lot of joy and happiness. Very good. Okay, thank you. And now we can. Any other questions? No, good, great. Now we can bow three times to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then we can go and do what we need to do.
Arahaṃ Sammā Sambuddho Bhagavā Buddhaṃ Bhagavantaṃ Abhivādhayami Suvākato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammaṃ Namassāmi Supatipanno Bhagavata.